Well, Matthew chapter 7 is full of some really helpful and practical things, beginning with this idea in verse 1 of judge not that you be not judged. Have you ever had someone tell you something like, man, you Christians are so judgmental? Or those Christians just seem to be so judgmental. And it's kind of a complicated topic because as a Christian, you know that God desires for you to be discerning. And yet, when you make judgments about the rightness or the wrongness of anything, then you face the question of judgmentalism. So we have to think through, well, what's the difference between making discerning decisions about you know, whether something is right or something is wrong, and how do we decide what would be judgmental in the way that this passage is leading us to? Well, Matthew chapter 7, I think, gives us a very clear perspective on this topic. Let's pray, and then we're going to dig in there. Father, I pray that you'd help us to be clear. I know that your word is helpful, and I think this is a place where we can just learn and that your spirit would teach us. So I'd ask that you'd help our hearts to be open, for this to be a place where your word is alive, and it speaks to our hearts here this morning. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I read a story about a young single guy. Every time he brought a girl to his home, his mother just criticized her so mercilessly. And this young guy was so upset, and one of his friends offered this advice. He said, find someone like your mother. So he thought that was a pretty good idea, and he looked until he found it was like a mom clone. I mean, she looked like his mother, and she talked like his mother, and she walked like his mother. In fact, it even seemed like she thought like his mother. It just was amazing. So he took her home. The next time he saw his friend who had given that advice, he asked, you know, how his mother liked the girl. The young guy said, man, it went great. My mother loved her, but my father couldn't stand her. You know, a critical spirit that sort of pervades our lives is like a cancer to the human situation. I mean, it's like toxic in our relationships. And we could test this, in fact, in a lot of different scenarios, maybe this one this morning. How many of you in your workplace, you have a coworker, might only be one or might be more than that, and you can think of somebody that really has a passion for criticizing? I mean, they're critical of the supervisor, and they're critical of your company, and they're critical of your policies, and they're critical of their responsibilities, and they're critical of their coworkers, and you know, maybe some of those are all of the above. My guess is that almost everybody has or knows somebody like that, probably working their magic in your work situation, and we could test this in other settings too. Unfortunately, it's really not all that different for Christians than it is for non-Christians. In fact, maybe worse in some situations. So we might joke about it, but when a critical spirit sort of worms its way into the church, man, it really has a devastating effect. In fact, I'd suggest to you that there are few things that are more destructive to the cause of Christ and really exhausting to a local fellowship of believers than the presence of harsh, unloving, and critical words and critical responses. It can be crushing. It just seems to sap the heart out of everybody. It takes away the life. It takes away the vibrancy and the joy of a fellowship. And unfortunately, honestly, across the world, in churches, there's often too much of it. It's devastating to the one who is being criticized. If you've ever faced criticism, especially in the church, if you've been you know, trying to go about some kind of ministry and somebody comes along and criticizes the work that you're trying to do, man, it just takes the joy out of the ministry. And not just is it, you know, devastating to the one who maybe receives the criticism, it's actually devastating to the one who has a critical spirit. They just end up sort of brooding in their negativity, and they end up with a life that really lacks spiritual joy. You don't see any joy coming out of their life as they kind of settle into this spirit of a critical heart. It's devastating to the testimony of Christ because others hear about it and they wonder, you know, they're talking to this person who's so critical of that person within their church or so critical of their church, and they're wondering, wow, you know, that's the same as it is at work. I thought the church might be different than that, and it has a devastating effect on the testimony of Jesus. Well, that's exactly what Jesus is talking about here in this text. And he puts it, again, right in the middle of these other very important topics that he's bringing up to us on this most important sermon in all of history. And so we're going to just work our way through what Jesus says this morning. And in fact, before I start, I want to kind of encourage you this morning. You know how we have a tendency to justify our actions and to think about how this might apply to somebody else. I want to encourage you this morning to consider whether God's speaking to you, whether God's speaking to us in this area. I saw a Peanuts comic strip. I don't know why I'm on the Peanuts kick all of a sudden, but Linus asked Lucy, "Why are you always so anxious to criticize me?" And Lucy answers, "I just think I have a knack for seeing other people's faults." There's a few people with that gift, right? Linus says, "Well, what about your own faults?" And her response is, "Well, I have a knack for overlooking them." And I think that's natural for us, right? Especially when we have a tendency to see them often in other people. So I want to gently encourage you this morning, don't do that. Let's see what God says to us, and let's evaluate our hearts as we look through these verses. All right, let's read this section. Beginning in verse 1, the Bible says this, "Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before the swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you." All right, so just like the rest of this sermon, Jesus doesn't mince any words here. I saw this analogy. It's sort of like a surgeon with the scalpel, and he's carefully cutting through some very sensitive nerve areas and laying open a tumor that has the ability to devastate us and devastate people around us. I mean, it's pretty intense the ways that he's describing it here. And I want to talk to you this morning about three practical application points. Actually, we're going to just talk about one this morning, and we're going to come back next week and talk about the next two of them. Here's the one main idea, and I got a number of points underneath this, but here's the application point for this morning. We must wage a personal war on the disease of a critical spirit. Okay, the focus of these first four verses is pretty clear. I mean, he says, do not judge. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but I want to first tell you what this does not mean. All right, when Jesus says, judge not that you be not judged, it does not mean that a Christians should never exercise spiritual discernment. In fact, the word judge comes from a Greek word that has the idea of to separate. It describes an ancient courtroom where a judge separated the truth from the error, separated the facts, and discerned what was true. All right, so this idea is really to determine what's good and what's bad, to discern the difference. We know that Jesus is not teaching us to stop being people of discernment. In fact, let me tell you why, right from this passage. If you look down at verse 6, we'll talk about this later, but in verse 6, he really calls us, he talks about these dogs and these swines. Actually, I heard somebody say, outline this text, be watchful of three things, logs, dogs, and hogs. All right, all three of them are in this text. We can't obey Jesus' commands here unless we judge who are the dogs and who are the pigs. I mean, really, it is part of the answer here. So he's not telling us not to be discerning, because we are going to have to discern. I'm going to read some other verses here in a minute, but we are going to have to make some decisions. In fact, if you look down at verse 15, it says, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. We're going to have to be able to tell the difference between the sheep and the wolves, and the wolves actually look like the sheep. So we're going to have to be aware of that. We're going to have to be discerning. We'll talk about that in a few weeks when we talk about false prophets. But all right, so Jesus is not telling us to not make judgments of discernment. In fact, there's a lot of other passages in the Bible that help us with this. I'll put a few of them up on the screen for you. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1 says, beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are come out into the world. You need to find out and determine who's a true teacher and who's a false teacher, and you're going to have to try this or judge this. John chapter 7, verse 24 says, judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. All right, there is a judgment that we should not do, but there is a judgment that we are called to do, we're commanded to. Philippians 1, verse 9 says, and this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment. I'm going to pray, Paul says, that you would grow in judgment in order that you may approve things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ. I'm going to actually pray that you'd grow in this area of judgment so that you'd be able to determine and discern what things are excellent and see those from those things that are not. So here's the problem. How do we tell the difference between, I'm going to put it in these terms, I've been talking about judgment versus discernment. How do we tell the difference between critical thinking and a critical spirit? All right, so I do think the Bible calls us to be critical thinkers. That means that we think carefully, we determine what's right and what's true, and we're able to separate that from what's false and what's error. So how do we become critical thinkers, being able to determine the goodness of something without becoming a critical person? And in fact, I'm going to list for you here, I think, five things. They're going to go fast. If you're a person who writes something down, you're not going to be able to write these all down. I'll tell you that already. But at the end, we've got a screen that will put them all up on the same slide. It'll be little, but if you want to take a picture at the end. And actually, I want to tell you this. Don't go easy on yourself here as you look at these evaluations. Don't justify. Think through, where do I fall in these areas to help me determine, to discern whether I'm just, you know, thinking critically, which is, I'm a critical thinker, or whether I'm becoming a critical person. Here's the five distinctions. Number one, a critical spirit is destructive. It tears down people. Critical thinking is constructive. It builds up people. And you can make that evaluation in your thinking. Is what I'm doing in the manner of building other people up and edifying them? If that's the case, then that's one thing. If it's tearing other people down, then that fits the other category. Number two, a critical spirit looks to find fault and seems to enjoy it when he does or she does. Critical thinkers are grieved when they discover wrong thinking or a fallen brother. There's such a big difference, and you'll notice this right away if you're talking with somebody. There's almost a little bit of enjoyment in the process of identifying somebody's faults, somebody who's hurt when somebody else has taken a wrong step. That's a different thing. 1 Peter 4 and verse 8 says, above all things have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover a multitude of sins. This goes above all these other things, and it should be the example for us. Number three, a critical spirit focuses on things that are of little importance and makes them matters of vital importance. And critical thinking judges righteous judgments in areas that are vital to the faith. Number four, a critical spirit judges others on the basis of personal agendas and convictions. And critical thinking makes judgments in areas of clear biblical teaching. I think this is really important if you want to kind of highlight this in all of these things together. By the way, you can make your own judgments and come to your own convictions about many things that the Bible does not give specific references to. In fact, I think you should. The Bible doesn't give specific references to all the decisions that you have to make about life and the things that you're going to choose to do and things that you're going to maybe stay away from. It doesn't give specific references to all these things. You're going to have to make some decisions. But, listen carefully, you ought to be very careful about judging another person that violates your decision about a personal agenda or conviction unless they're in a violation of a clear biblical command. And we've messed this up a lot in the church over the years. You're going to have to make your own convictions and standards, but listen, you better be very careful about judging somebody else on a matter that the Bible doesn't clearly define. There's only one standard. There's only one yardstick that we are to judge other people by, and that is the Word of God. When you judge others on the basis of your own standards or your own opinions or your own feelings, you're paddling a canoe with a bunch of holes in it. That thing's going to sink at some point. Number five, a critical spirit usually has a high view of their personal righteousness, and critical thinkers see themselves as fellow sinners in need of God's grace. This isn't always true. Sometimes critical people are critical because they're sort of insecure in themselves, and if I can kind of make others look bad, at least in my own mind, then it makes me sort of feel better about myself. But often this is true. Judges usually have a high view of their own personal righteousness and their goodness. This is not how critical thinkers, they see ourselves as fellow sinners in need of God's grace. By the way, let me look at a couple of other passages if you turn there. A perfect example of this is in Luke chapter 18. I want you to turn to Luke 18. Luke 18 and verse 9 says this. Talking about the Pharisees, and here's how he describes the Pharisees. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. This was not a good character trait in Jesus' mind. They trusted in their own righteousness, but looked down on other people. R. Kent Hughes said, when a critic discovers faults in another, he feels a malignant satisfaction and always sees the worst possible motives in the other's actions. The critical spirit is like the carrion fly that buzzes with a sickening hum of satisfaction over sores, preferring corruption to health. Man, don't get caught up in this kind of a critical spirit, because it's just destructive to the people around you and it's destructive to your own soul. By the way, we're going to move on, look at a couple of the references, but can I just remind you that a critical spirit and the gossiping tongue seem always to just go together. The critic usually is not content to criticize alone, They get in groups of two or three or small groups, and they sort of spread their venom, their critique around to others. And again, it's just so destructive. I want you to look at two other texts. Romans chapter 14. Turn there with me. Romans 14. This is a context of what kind of a meat a Christian should eat. A few months, or actually over a year ago, we spent some time in Romans 14. Let me just read these verses as it relates to this idea. A few verses. Verse 4 says this, "Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth, yet he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand." Listen, that's not your job to judge somebody else's servant or their decisions. That's between them and God. Go down to verse 10. "But why dost thou judge thy brother? Why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. So let us not therefore judge one another anymore. But judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." Listen, this is not the job of the church. Even though it's very natural for us humanly, and that's why we find it in our work situations, in our family situations, in our friend situations. Listen, this is not how God's people are to react to each other. Go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 4 says, "For I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the heart, and then shall every man have praise to God." All right, so this is just a few of the references in the New Testament where we come back to the same theme that Jesus brings before us on how we're supposed to respond to other people around us. Listen, God is very, very serious about the judgmental spirit. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 7. The rest of verses 1 through 4 tell us why this type of critical spirit is so wrong and it's so hurtful. And the illustration that Jesus uses to make his point is as ridiculous and sarcastic as possible. In fact, I think that we've sort of heard this illustration so many times that it's lost its humor. It's sort of lost its twist to us. The idea of the speck and the mote or the beam in somebody's eyes, I mean, it's a pretty common theme that we hear or example that we hear about in relation to this topic. But the people in Jesus' audience were probably, laughing out loud as he tried to explain, or describe for them kind of what happened here. I want to get some help here this morning. I need somebody that's good reflexes, and everybody's looking down. TJ, could you come help me for a second? I know you're so excited for this. Thanks. Come on up here, man. If you can just come up here and stand for a second, just right over there. I brought something with me. So you have good reflexes, right? Okay, we'll see today. And don't be afraid to duck, all right? Let me just tell you that information. Okay. In fact, stay right there, TJ. Let me read the verses again. You'll look at them. Verse 3 and 4. "Why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye?" Right? So we know this illustration. The mote is really this idea of a speck, sort of like a piece of sawdust. It's very small, and the idea is that there's a small speck of dust, a small little tiny thing that TJ is having a problem with in his eye, and I might notice it. His eye's a little bit red, but there's another person. I mean, that's sort of the illustration. Two guys, another person who has a beam, right, in his eye. I mean, that's the idea. And it is sort of a log, right? It's a 2x4 that's in this other person's eye. And so the idea is that I have this 2x4 in my eye. I'm trying to look around so I don't cause a real problem. I have this 2x4 in my eye, and I look across to my brother, and I see a little tiny piece of sawdust in TJ's eye, and I'm, you know, going to take care of that. And so, you do have good reflexes, right? Okay. And don't be afraid to duck again, TJ, I said that, okay? I don't want like a lawsuit or something after this message. So I come to TJ and I say, I want to help him, right? Because he's got this, he has this piece of sawdust in his eye, and so I want to make sure that I help him, you know, take care of this. All right, TJ, that's enough. Really, that is the idea. And the idea, I think, was that Jesus' listeners were laughing as he describes to them, you have a log in your eye, and you're looking across to your brother with a little tiny speck of sawdust in his eye, and you're trying to tell him how you're going to help him remove that problem that he has in his eye. It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. And that's exactly the point. And I can see Jesus' listeners thinking, hey, I know somebody like that. Yeah, I know some people like that. They got a big log in their eye, and they keep walking around trying to get the little specks out of everybody else's eyes. They're always quick to judge someone else, and yet they have some glaring spiritual weaknesses. They just seem oblivious to them. In fact, the beam in the eye is the one with the critical spirit. I mean, according to this text, the one with the critical spirit is the one who's walking around with a beam in their eye. But they just overlook that. In fact, that's one of the great dangers of this type of judging. Is as long as I spend my time pointing my finger at you, then my attention is distracted from my own sins, and it takes a little of the pressure off. Can I give you just five things that are here in this text as I kind of walk through and apply these things? They'll be quick. Number one, criticism is wrong because it usurps God's job and it invites God's judgment. That's exactly the point of verse 2. It's not your job to judge. This is God's job. And when you take God's job, then you invite God's judgment. James 4, 11 and 12 says, speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Romans 14, verse 20 says, but why do you judge thy brother, or why do you set it not thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. Listen, according to Matthew 7, 2, a person with a critical spirit will be judged by God at the judgment seat of Christ. Here's number two. Criticism is wrong because it turns the focus of our attention outward rather than inward, and it assumes motives. It puts our focus on the externals, and the reality is that you don't know the person's motives. When you're judging them, you can only judge what you see. You don't know what's going on in their heart, so you better be very, very careful to make a judgment on what you can see, because what's going on inside you're not aware of. Man looks on the outward appearance. God looks on the heart. I don't know what's in your heart. I can't read your motives. I can't see you as God sees you. So I need to give you the benefit of the doubt, right? Number three, criticism is wrong because our knowledge is limited. We don't know the whole story. The old Indian proverb says, never judge a man until you've walked a mile in his moccasins. And it's true, you don't know the whole story. I think it was Steve Martin that says, never judge a man unless you've walked a mile in his shoes, because then you'll be a mile away and you have his shoes, right? I don't know who wrote this. It's anonymous, but I thought it was awesome. Listen to this. Listen carefully to this. Don't find fault with the man who limps or stumbles along life's road unless you've worn the shoes he wears or struggled beneath his load. There may be tacks in his shoes that hurt, though hidden away from our view. The burden he bears, if placed on your back, might cause you to stumble too. Don't be too hard on the man who errs or pelt him with wood or stone, unless you are sure, yea, double sure, that you have no fault of your own. Criticism is wrong because our knowledge is limited. Criticism is wrong because our perspective is distorted. I mean, if I have a beam in my eye, how in the world am I going to see clearly enough to try to help somebody else? I have a distorted vision, and I better know that as I get started. And then number five, criticism is wrong because it's hypocritical. Verse 5 says, you hypocrite. First, get rid of the beam that's in your eye before you go looking at the speck in somebody else's eye. Let me just introduce this second point and third point. We're going to come back to it next week. It's really going to be a springboard for us to go to Galatians chapter 6. But I want to introduce it to you this morning because it's a really important balance to what we just said right here. Okay, so don't miss, if you miss next week, don't miss what I'm going to say right here because these two things have to come together. Here it is. So we just said we must wage a personal war on the disease of a critical spirit. Here's two and three. We must be serious about personal spiritual self-examination. That's verse 5. We're going to come back to it. And then this one. We must exercise tenderness when we seek to help others. Again, I think that's out of verse 5. And the point that I want to make to you is that Jesus did not instruct us to stay out of other Christians' business. If that sounds crazy to you from what we just said, I want you to hang in here because Jesus did not instruct us to stay out of other Christians' business. In fact, just the opposite. He tells us that we have a responsibility to help our brother to get involved. But what he says is that first you got to remove the plank from your own eye. I mean, that's what the text is telling us. Remove the plank from your own eye. Then you're going to see clearly and you're going to be able to help your brother. But listen, what is a loving Christian brother to do when someone comes to you and he's got a speck in his eye? I mean, the reality is that if TJ is walking along beside me and he has a piece of something in his eye, whether he realizes it or not, it is eventually going to be a problem for him. What happens if nobody helps him? That's not what Jesus is calling us to do. In fact, we have a lot of other passages where Jesus, Galatians 6 in particular, is going to help us to understand how do we walk alongside somebody that has received a speck in their eye. But listen, we got to do this carefully, and we got to make sure that we've looked carefully at our own soul before we do it. We're going to come back to this. The key is that we have to do it in the right manner. That's what I want to talk about next week. Well, we began this morning talking about the idea that a critical spirit saps the life. It saps the heart. It saps the joy out of a person, out of a church. And can I just tell you that all it takes is one? One critical spirit. Back in my younger days, I spent a lot of time on athletic teams, mostly basketball, but I played on soccer teams and baseball teams, just whatever involved athletics in some way, I was usually involved with it. I've been on good teams and I've been on bad teams. Even as I look back, I don't usually associate the good and the bad on the basis of whether it was wins or losses. I mean, that comes along to it, but it had something to do with the unity of that team, and usually the unity had a lot to do with how successful we were eventually, unless we just didn't have any talent, so sometimes that happens. All of those teams are the same. No matter what the sport, no matter what the situation, all the teams are the same. And that is that all it takes is one person to express a critical spirit. Usually it's against the coach. I mean, just sort of these voices that this guy or this lady just doesn't know what they're doing. Sometimes it's against other players. But I'm telling you, when that happens, I mean, immediately the unity of that team is destroyed. And what we once had that was a lot of fun, we're kind of all in this together, and we're all unified, we're all going the same way for the same purpose. A critical spirit like just destroys that. It just divides it. And it's no fun. It's no fun for anybody. The Apostle Paul thought this was so serious that throughout his letters, I mean, all throughout them, he warns over and over. He says, watch out for those who with their words and with their spirits divide. Watch out. Be careful. Isaac Murray tells a story about a dog that was hitched to a lawnmower. This young boy was out mowing the lawn and he hitched his dog to the front of the lawnmower. The dog pulled the mower and the boy just guided it along. The problem was that anytime somebody walked by on the sideline, the dog stopped pulling and started barking at whoever would walk by. And one day somebody walked by and the dog stops pulling and starts barking, and this little boy calls out to the passerby. And he says, don't mind the dog. He's just barking for an excuse to rest. It's easier to bark than to pull the mower. I want to tell you, we are so blessed to be a part of a church family like the one here at Harvest. I cannot tell you this enough. I can't say it enough times. Here is one of the primary reasons why we are so blessed. Not because this church is perfect. It's not. Harvest has, you know, problems just like any other church because it involves humans, right? We got humans here. But you know what? We just have a family full of pullers and not barkers. And that is a blessing, because it's hard to pull and bark at the same time, isn't it? So let's just keep making that commitment as a church family, in your family, in your work situation, whatever it is, make that commitment to be pullers. And when someone loses focus, and it's going to happen, it happens in every situation, again, because we're human. And when they lose focus a little bit and they start barking a little, then one of us just has to gently put the rope back in their mouth, right? And help them to say, so we're gonna pull and we're not going to bark. Because that's how we get things done. That's how the sweetness of the unity takes place.